My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about the Vince Gilliverse, including Better Call Saul.
Yeah, and this week we're talking about the episode Fall, which was written by Gordon Smith, directed by Minky Spiro, and it originally aired on June the 12th of 2017.
Yeah, Jimmy's up in his crapulence.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
He's deciding, I'm going to ruin the lives of some people who were born in the Coolidge administration.
We'll get into this as this plot plays out. Uh-huh. The end goal he wants for them is not life ruining at all.
No, not at all.
He wants something good. Like, this is actually probably better for them than what was planned.
Yes.
He makes a lot of good points. It's just, this is a failure of imagination.
Yeah.
On Jimmy's part, like, the only way he can do it is by being shitty.
Yes.
In this case. And he did, like, I do think this is a mistake. I don't think he expected it to go this way. You know, this is still him on the precipice. I don't think this is him fully over the edge or anything.
No.
He does immense damage to himself to undo it when he realizes his mistake.
Yeah.
But it still feels queasy. Like, it's in terms of just kind of like audience watching around, this is the queasiest I've felt in watching him do stuff, including everything that happens next episode.
I only just wanted to say a good sentence about ruining the life of somebody born in the Coolidge administration.
These old ladies are great.
Yeah.
So he's learned, you know, when he comes back to being a lawyer, it's going to be really expensive. Money problems have still been a thing for him. He's like, what about this big payday I have coming? The Sandpiper Crossing settlement. I get 10% of the common fund for this.
20%.
The writers brought back Sandpiper specifically to remind the audience that this is a whole series spanning payoff. This is what is ultimately going to make Saul Goodman rich initially. Yeah. You know, he doesn't get rich off of the Jesse Pinkmans of the world.
No.
He's rich and then has the Jesse Pinkmans and then the Walter White make him even more rich.
Yes. Yeah. We have Chuck blowing up the rest of his life. Like, it's not just a Jimmy thing. Like, he finds out about his own malpractice insurance woes and starts cutting ties.
Yeah, reacts in the worst possible way.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We have kind of a slowpoke plot starting here with Mike, where he's signing out with Madrigal. This eventually leads to some scenes I really like. Mm-hmm. But this is Gus wants to get Mike on his side through this and is kind of playing him a little bit. Also, Mike does have a genuine need. Mm-hmm. We're going to have kind of the this Mike arc of him being a little bit untethered for a little bit until he decides to become a soldier.
Yes.
And then the plot that feels like it has the most intensity in this that's wrapping up is Nacho the Salamanca's and his father. He breaks the news to his father about the Salamanca's wanting to use the upholstery shop.
Yeah.
His dad, one of the only purely like decent characters in the universe of the show.
We're cooking here.
Yeah.
The cast has expanded so much. We have so many more threads going. Mm-hmm. And we're reaching the end of this season, kind of getting a lot of payoff for some stuff that like was not especially clearly indicated that was going on, right?
Yeah. It's interesting too, because after we get this payoff, we are gonna enter into another like little miniature free fall. Mm-hmm. I feel like a little bit where like it takes a little while for the show to kind of find its direction again after this, like during the off year.
Yeah.
You know, the entire time Jimmy's not practicing law before he kind of comes back, it's a little bit meandery. Mm-hmm. But we have this kind of stuff. We set up these aftershocks to keep things moving a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, keep things kind of bubbling. We start off, Jimmy has put some, he bought some grocery store kitty cat cookies, just grocery store sugar cookies. One of the worst cookies.
Oh, yeah, on a paper plate. Just turns to dust in your mouth.
Yeah, just really nasty. Wraps them in foil, like arranges them like they're homemade, and goes to Sandpiper to talk with Mrs. Landry. Sweet, good old Mrs. Landry.
Yeah.
And he says he made the cookies he thought of her because he accidentally made ones that look like her kitty cats.
Yeah, this one reminded me of your cat, Felix. I wanted to come and see how you were doing.
Yeah. And he brings up the settlement. He's like, you must be living large on that settlement money. Mm-hmm. And he acts surprised that it has not gone through. Mrs. Landry's like, oh, you know, the settlement's a really long way off. I've been working with Erin from Davis and Maine. She's wonderful. She reminds me of a young Mary Martin. It's very funny.
Yeah.
You know, but basically Davis and Maine is holding out like for more essentially.
Yeah.
There's a settlement, but they want to fight it and get more money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they stand to gain more than the plaintiffs if the fund gets bigger, right?
Yes.
And you know, Mrs. Landry is deferring to the professional. And Jimmy, you know, Jimmy knows that this hasn't settled. He would have gotten a check, but he's here to kind of check what the status is.
Yeah, weigh the scales a little bit too.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy's asking if she's received an offer as class representative, and she shows him a box of paperwork. He has to remind her he's not a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he looks at the letter and his eyes go big. He says, you haven't accepted this, you know, and she, it's up to Aaron. And Jimmy goes, yeah. You know, but it's not up to Aaron. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Aaron says to wait, but Miss Landry is referring to her. Essentially, his argument that he'll make more explicitly later is that they have a small percentage. So, like, this goes up, you know, by double. It's not very much money additionally for them, but it's gargantuan mm-hmm. amounts of money for yeah. Davis and Maine and for Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
But Jimmy is not, he's being greedy, but he's not being supervillain greedy, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, he's fine with it. You know, the amount of money he gets is life-changing money, and he'd be fine.
I think that he is making something of a point here.
I think so
like,
too.
His motivation is like, hey, I would really like to benefit from this money now. He even says like, oh, you don't take the installments. You take the lump sum if you win the lottery, right?
And the thing is, even if you do take if there's an argument for the installments, it's not for people at Mrs. Landry's age.
No, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
There were shooters for Jimmy and people get frustrated with it. Mm-hmm. Like in this case, he is certainly acting from greed. Not mm-hmm. defending him in that. He isn't entirely wrong. Like mm-hmm. the thing he wants would also serve these people.
Yes.
At this point, you know, in the abstract before he enacts his methods.
Yeah. You're in your 80s. Every day is a gift and you can't count on it, right?
Yeah.
So like, do you want to benefit from this now? Like, do you want to get this so you can decide who it's going to go to? Do you want to live it up a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a bit of a knife twist in the next episode when he says, you know, it's not like she's going to live much longer anyway. That is true. It's just kind of rude.
He's callous in how you say it. Yeah. It's really mean. It's very contrary to how he's been, but it is a true thing. Yeah. Like he is correct, but he can't just advise her that because that gets into sticky law shit that he's not allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're interrupted when Rose Myrtle and Helen show up to get Irene for chair yoga.
I love old lady names so much.
I do too. They're all very funny old ladies in this.
Yeah.
They invite Jimmy. He's not dressed for it. You know, he's busy. He goes outside and he's miserable because he's doing the math in his head.
Yeah.
You know, if they accepted, he would get $1,160,000.
Yeah.
Rent an office for forever.
Yes.
You know, take care of everything. Kim could chill out working. All mm-hmm. things he wants and needs. They could keep Francesca on. Like, he gets his dream in life, which is the two of them live in an office and work mm-hmm. in an office.
You get a bunch of security off of, you know, $1 million like that.
Yeah. We cut over to Mike sitting in a hallway at Madrigal's Houston office. A guy buzzes by on a Segway. It's that kind of workplace. He's called back to meet with Lydia about his fake job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very skeptical of it.
Yes.
He thinks that this is kind of a fly-by-night thing.
Yeah. And he's worried about getting his name on the books, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you know, just we make anything official, take anything out of cash, you know, my real name and social's on here. This is going to blow back on me. You know, she says like, all right, well, you've got $10,000 per week for 25 weeks with the amount of money that you need laundered. Gus is handling all of the tax burden, which is ridiculously generous.
Yeah. It's Gus endearing himself to him.
Yes.
You know, very much so.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you know, I don't want to have my real name on this because we have to present appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to be a cop, I should be a security consultant.
Yeah, not logistics. You know? I'm not long on logistics, he says.
Like, yeah, not long on, you know, if I put my real name in this, Madrigal is a German company. Like, he's done his research. Mm-hmm. One thing about Germans is they love a good audit. And she says, you know, I have my real name on this. Mm-hmm. Like, I move this much money, we're talking about a rounding error.
Yeah.
Like, this is nothing. My name is in the books as well. Mm-hmm. And he's still skeptical. He said, you know, is this how Gus handles his other guys? And she says, no, there are no other guys.
Yeah.
This is my first time doing this. Which makes me wonder what Victor and Tyrus's job are officially.
Yeah.
You know, and she realizes that Mike does not understand the scale of Gus Fring.
Yes. She speaks about him like she's talking like a cult leader here.
Yes.
You know,
I love Mike's disgust at people who deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, I could watch a supercut of Mike being disgusted with Walt and Lydia
uh-huh.
for like forever. Just like, ugh,
like fucking the snarl. You. Like he doesn't even bother to hide it, really. Yeah. Just this, like the snarl that he gives.
It's the privilege of the very old where you don't have to hide shit like this. You mm-hmm. can just be like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, what are they going to do? Stop you?
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, it's a very nice office. You know, you're risking a lot for a drug dealer. You know, drug dealer, if you think that's what he is, you don't know Gustavo Fring.
Yeah. Like I do. Yeah. So the, he goes ahead and signs the paperwork. This eventually is going to lead to a lot of fun stuff. It's going to take mm-hmm. a while. And them attempting to have it have stakes doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because I'm not that concerned about what happens to Lydia.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes here, I love these. See every bit in the next two episodes with Howard and Chuck are golden. Mm-hmm. Howard and Chuck are meeting with the representatives from the insurance company. And they're like, listen, we're going to have to double the premiums. You know, there are contingencies we can have. We can have another partner, you know, kind of check in on what Chuck does and stuff.
Yeah.
And Chuck cuts us off. Like, listen, this is ridiculous. You know, I know insurance law. I can think of a bunch of things you're doing wrong. I'm going to sue you for this.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't consult Howard, didn't talk about it or anything. He's just like, this is obviously what we're going to do. And Howard gives him a look like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, if you're threatening litigation, this meeting is over. It's like, well, I guess we'll see you in court. Mm-hmm. They leave and Chuck gives him kind of a smile. He's wincing from electricity that's in the room. When Chuck is nervous about anything, electricity hurts him more.
Yes.
And Chuck starts going into it. He's like, you know, we've never been one to shy away from a fight. Mm-hmm. Let's get people pulling stuff on this and this and this. get the people on it.
Yeah.
You know?
And Howard's pouring him some whiskey, right? And brings up like, oh, you remember this this friend, this judge or whatever. He's lecturing at this university. He wants you to come, come speak. Maybe make it a regular thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gets down to it. You know, he's not just suggesting activities. Maybe it's time to hang up your spurs.
Yeah, you always wanted to study this. Maybe you could write the book on it.
Yeah.
And Chuck is like confused by this. And he's, Chuck, there's more to life than this. He goes, that day is far in the future and I don't appreciate the suggestion. And one best line, great. Howard goes, what if it's not a suggestion? What does that mean? Well, if enough people tell you you're drunk, maybe it's time to sit down.
Yeah.
Great line. Mm-hmm. Chuck is furious. And Howard, he says, oh, is this, just the electricity thing? I'm fine. Grabs the thing. It's just the insurance. And Howard goes, no, that's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And he's like, this isn't what fine looks like. And also your judgment has been reckless.
Yeah.
For a long time, I cannot be partners with somebody whose judgment I do not trust.
Yeah. This is true. They've been aligned, entire time. They are both working to advance the firm.
Yeah.
And Chuck is being an arsonist here, kind of like Jimmy.
Yeah, very, very much so. Like Patrick Fabian's performance in this is so good.
Yeah.
Like it just, really, really great line deliveries, really, really pointed. Like, I did that because I used, you had the best interest of the firm. I do. You did.
Yeah.
Like it's very good. Like it's not practiced, but he's letting a lot of frustrations. Like this man has put up with Chuck's bullshit for a very long time.
Yeah. We talk a lot about what Jimmy has gone through putting up with Chuck's bullshit. And obviously that is much more acute, on a regular daily basis or whatever. Howard just kind of inherited this relationship with Chuck, and has had to maintain it in order to keep his business going.
Yes.
And he has, been very deferential even before the EHS, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's Chuck forgotten people. Chuck does not value people and does not understand that he's mm-hmm. that other people have been inconveniencing themselves for him for decades, and that's why he dies.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Howard's very measured. This is not, it doesn't get angry until he gets
mean.
And I mean, it doesn't ever gets like shouting. He is speaking very firmly and clearly. This is reasonable. Like he is seeing Chuck for what he is right now.
Yeah, all that could be expected of him. Being very professional. We cut over to Kevin Wachell's oil man, Billy Gatwood, laying out a situation for Kim. This is such a weird little subplot. It's just also to be a straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, yeah.
We spend a lot of time with this as it's going to be a big thing,
mm-hmm.
As kind of a red herring.
Yes, yeah.
Like, you know, it's about this thing about oil and like whether, you know, it's drainage and like whether the wells extend underground and other people's border past the Texas, New Mexico border, or they can be taxed on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Kim says, don't pay a lease, pay damages. It'll be cheaper. And he says, listen, this is a rush job. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be done by the end of the quarter. Kim goes, that's in 2 weeks, but I'll do it. Mm-hmm. You know, Kim is pushing herself really hard here for multiple reasons. Like, the obvious one is that she has to make extra money for the office, but she's probably doesn't have to make, the office can't be that expensive. Mm-hmm. She has to take every job in the world. She was pressured to do this also by Kevin Wachell, and she's been negged by Howard recently. Yeah. Like, oh, you made it up from the from document review. Mm-hmm. You know, she has something to prove to herself in addition to wanting to make more money.
Yes.
From this.
Yeah. Just overextending herself. This is not played with melodrama. Like we've seen this. It's kind of been a bit of a background detail. Not getting a lot of focus with Kim burning the candle at both ends here. Like we've gotten, I just saw you yesterday. You know, that was Tuesday. She's losing time. You know, she's taking very sad 5-minute naps in her car.
Yeah. This is all leading somewhere.
Yeah.
As she leaves, her car loses traction, so she has to put a board in front of it, do that little trick.
Yeah, they're on the desert next to like an oil pump, like a derrick. Yeah. I don't know what they're called.
Parked directly in front of an oil pump thing. She pushes the car, it manages to go, and then she has to rush after it so it doesn't crash into the oil pump.
Yeah.
Real weird way for Kim's story to end if she's blew up in an oil explosion, like, and there'll be blood.
What a day.
We thought we had something with Ray Seahorn, and we wanted this character to go some places, but we decided we wanted to write her out. We wanted to do it out in an explosive way that leads the fans excited.
People said there wasn't enough action, there wasn't enough explosions in the series. Yeah.
So we figured we'd have Kim explode from oil.
Yeah.
Just wipe that piece off the board. No, obviously, she makes it. She's fine, but she's just really, really stressed.
Yeah, she hops in there and just like the expression on her face, huge mirror neuron kind of stuff.
Howard rolls into his parking spot in the garage, and Jimmy's waiting for him. And he's immediately Howard thinks it's about Chuck. You know, is this about Chuck? Who? This is also, man, God, this is a great Patrick Fabian episode.
Oh God, yeah.
Jimmy's like, oh no, it's about Sam Piper. Mm-hmm. Howard says, listen, I know that's what we've offered them, but we project a higher amount. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy says, the clients need money now. Like, you get a bunch more money, they're just getting a tiny piece of it.
Yeah.
And Howard calls out one of his like dual motivations. Like, as we discussed before, I think he's motivated by both things.
Yeah.
Howard can only see the bad one. Again, the plotting of the show, a character has a stressful situation with somebody. The next person they interact with, they treat with less benefit of the doubt than they would. Mm-hmm. He just got done with this thing with Chuck. Like, now he's really activated.
Yes. Howard is beset on all sides by McGills.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it just says, like, yeah, no, you only want your share of the payout. Like, oh, you're talking about the clients. You know, it's like talking to Gollum. You're transparent and pathetic.
Yes.
Taking his contempt. I love
it's like talking to Gollum.
Yeah.
And Howard says, next time you want a handout, he offers Jimmy $1. And Jimmy actually looks at it.
Uh-huh.
It's more than a dollar. It's like a handful of, fives or 20s or something.
Yeah, just grabs a wad from his wallet.
Yeah. And Jimmy's like, and next time bring a tin cup, it'll be more honest. Fucking brutal.
Yeah.
And he says, listen, I know you're not going to try to sabotage HHM because it would jeopardize your payout. You're going to have to wait. Get fucked.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. So Hector, Nacho, Arturo, Gus, and Victor are waiting in an abandoned factory because Juan Bolsa calls, shows up. This is when he calls. He shows up next episode. To say, listen, Don Eladio likes how things are going. He just wants everyone to use Gus's truck for smuggling the product.
Yes. The setup here is very funny because like it's rainy, they're in this derelict building, but they still have like a nice little table, like a little desk with a lamp on it for Hector to sit on.
It's because it's before Jimmy invented burner phones.
Yeah.
That you could use anywhere. You used to have to set up a little like Sears model office in an abandoned factory. And, Bolsa asks if Hector hears him, and Hector smashes the phone, says, I hear you, while staring down Gus. He obviously is seeing through, this is part of Gus's plan.
Yeah.
Gus denies it at this point, but he's being masterfully, plausible deniability.
Yeah. You know, it's, Hector sees himself and his family being marginalized within the broader cartel, right? Yes. Gus is ascendant here, and now Hector is going to have to rely on this person that he hates.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, no, he's furious. It's a huge insult. You know, and Hector, like, he starts having a fit, like a cardiac episode. You know, he reaches for his pills, you know, guzzles a few of them down, you know, and when he gets his composure back, he says, fuck Eladio, fuck Bolsa, and fuck you to Gus.
And it's worth noting his pills have been swapped.
Yes.
This is after, and this not working, like magic, you know, magic, you know, heart attack placebo is what is going to cause cause Nacho to kind of advance his plans in the beginning of the next episode.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like slowly but surely, every time he gets pissed off, he's getting closer and closer to the fake pills thing paying off.
Yes. So Jimmy's at the mall first thing in the morning. This is definitely the mall from Monochromaha.
Yeah, no, it's very funny. I saw it too. Yeah. It's like they're relying, like, malls tend to be anonymous. Like, a lot of them look very similar to each other. Like, yeah, and you can recognize the escalators and the railways and stuff.
They're the exact same layout. Yeah. You know, he's wearing a mall walking outfit, his white tracksuit, and these special speakers or sneakers that they used to have. Yeah. I remember when these kind of actually swept when I worked at Fred Meyer, worked at a department store. Mm-hmm. A bunch of the older ladies who I worked with got really into these because the idea was they would make you like lose weight by walking.
Yeah.
Because they have like a curve to them that like, and people were just like, oh, you just, you know, it's like you get the benefit of running from walking.
Yeah.
With these super sneaks.
And doubt.
But, yeah, big doubt.
But also you get to look goofy while you do it.
Yeah. If it were true, they'd sell them now. Like, yeah. You know, he waits in the path for Irene Landry and gives her a little speech about how he loves mall walking. You know,
been out of the game for a little while.
I love
that. Got this damn plantar fasciitis, hurts like a bear.
Been out of the game. He shows off his super sneakers. And he goes, you know what? Do you like them? She says she does. He goes, I got an extra pair for my girlfriend. They don't fit. What's your size? We hard cut to him rummaging through a box of every size of that sneaker.
He's got him in his trunk in the esteem. Yeah. He just bought out the rack.
Yeah, he puts in the work. Thing I love about Jimmy.
Yeah.
He gives them to Eileen, and she's like, I can't take them for free. He says, listen, don't tell anybody who gave them to you. You know, I'm going to think I'm playing favorites.
Yeah.
Here. And this is Jimmy being a real shithead.
Yeah.
The solution he came for this to get her to sell is to get her friends to resent her for not having done, not sell, settle.
He's trying to build up the pressure, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, Irene is not particularly motivated by the money, but if he can get other people to
misspeech, but you said mummy instead of money.
Yeah.
And I love Irene is not particularly motivated by the mummy.
Emotep.
And we just got to the fucking mummy chasing her slowly and her just with her Irene smile. Jimmy like convincing the friends, like, oh, she doesn't have to worry about the mummy. She doesn't care about curses. It must be nice for her, huh? And they're all just like,
But we get a montage of him kind of pressing every button that he knows how to do, using these poor women's feelings, right?
Yes.
Kind of doing a good, like, and, you know, not quite exactly a Chuck thing, but like he thinks that nothing permanent is happening here.
Yeah.
Not treating them like people.
Yeah, this sucks.
It's social manipulation stuff set to a very jazzy little version of Popcorn. I love that song. but like he, you know, tells her friends like, oh, you know, she has this stuff. She just must not need the money, right? Like she's not scraping by like you guys are. That has to explain it, you know. And you just got to pay attention. Like if somebody's going out and buying a bunch of fancy things, you know, like those shoes, for example.
Yeah, really sad. You know, this had a bunch of days, you know, Chair Yogi explains to the other people how little they'll extra get, like basically the truth.
Yeah.
Like he uses peanuts to say like, if they hold out, no one's going to get very much more.
Yeah.
You know, and this is true of, it's not like the person who's a representative gets extra for being a representative. This is stuff he can't just tell Eileen because that would get sniffed out.
Yeah.
Like he has to go in directly because he will get caught and he can't be doing this.
Yeah. Schweikert and Coakley would say the class representative was plied by somebody with a, you know, with a, with an interest. Yeah. We need to throw this thing out.
We need a new, you know, or at the very least new class representative, you know, it would suck. It would blow everything up.
It would set everything back.
And then this works. Eileen is out mall walking and the ladies want nothing to do with her. And I wish this was set to like music from the Dodo YouTube of like a sad dog that gets rescued or something. It's like the saddest thing that's ever been.
Oh my gosh.
With Eileen is like in the arms of an angel. Like it just, it's very sad.
Yeah. Just getting iced out by these, you know, her social life. We don't see a lot of family. Like it's rough.
This is why they do old folks homes other than just like, so it's not a burden on the family. It's like a social life. It's hard to meet people as an adult. It's even harder when you're super old. You may as well have these activities and stuff and live in the same place as kind of like a fun compound for the olds.
Yeah. Activities and structure. Yeah.
Yeah. So cut over to Nacho waiting at his dad's kitchen table to talk to him.
Yeah. And Nacho says like, hey, you know, a bad man's going to come to the shop. He's going to want to run the place for a while and you need to let him do it. You know, Nacho knows the way that his dad is going to react. He did the whole fake pill thing, trying to stop this from happening. You know, Nacho is doing, you know, criminal stuff and his dad doesn't approve because like we said earlier, he is one of the most upright people in the entire universe.
Yeah. And in this community, the name Salamanca has big weight.
Yes.
You know, Manuel asks who the man is, and he hears it, and he's like, you know. Nacho goes, I've been working for them again. I know what you're going to want to do, but you can't do it. Like, basically, this guy's not fucking around.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to want to stand up to this guy, and he kills people for no reason.
Yeah.
I promise this will be over soon. He knows he couldn't tell his dad, I'm going to indirectly manslaughter this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, his dad's not going to be happy with that, but he is doing it for really pure reasons. Like,
yeah.
You know, in terms of the bad guys in the show, Nacho's a really good guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, he's motivated by wanting to get out, right?
Yeah, very much so. And, like, you know, it's hard to get out. Like, it's interesting to have a character in this crime show. One of the things this show does a lot is it plays with, you know, there's a morality of the show that is like, you know, once you're on Bad Choice Road, you're just fucking there. Yeah. And it is a gyre that will just suck you in. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty, you know, we have with Nacho and Jesse, like parallel characters, they both take various attempts to really want out. Mm-hmm. Like they will fuck up, they'll make a mistake, and then try to get out. Like try to undo it, try to stop.
Yeah.
You know, in a sincere way, in a way that's like a stronger attempt than some of the other people.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of affection for both those characters because of that. Like I want people to be able to atone for mistakes.
Yeah. You know? And it's like, it comes down to motivation. Like both Jesse and Nacho are, you know, beholden to larger, very much more stubborn personalities.
Yes. Right? Yeah. But Manuel doesn't buy it. He says, how can I believe anything you say?
Yeah.
You know, Nacho says, you promise me you won't do anything stupid. Yeah. And Manuel just tells him to get out of his house.
Yeah. Heartbreaking.
So, heartbreaking. And who knows?
Yeah.
Howard's assistant brings him a letter after a meeting. It's from Chuck, and he wants him to read it ASAP. And Howard thinks he's accepting the retirement. Mm-hmm. You know,
no, this get a resignation letter.
Yeah. Get a band, get a nice restaurant. He opens the envelope and says, God damn it, Chuck.
Which is what I've been saying this whole time.
Really good. Again, Patrick Fabian, killer in this episode.
Yeah.
He goes to Chuck's place, you know, and the lights are on. Chuck is cooking in the kitchen. You know, in a Jimmy-esque move, he's playing this.
Yeah.
Like he knew he needed to show like he's super fine and show no cracks in his armor for this.
Yeah. So he's just standing at the electric stove holding an immersion blender for hours, to get there.
Look, I can even put my hand on the immersion blender. Yeah. This would hurt somebody without EMS. But I have super immunity.
Yeah. To make it clear, Chuck is suing the firm, right?
Like, yes.
Oh, you're going to try and push me out? You know, this is a violation of my rights. This is like an ADA thing. You are doing this because of my condition.
Yeah. It's a breach of contract.
Yes.
You know, and if you don't trust me, I have to be paid out. It's $8 million, which we both know is going to kill the firm.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, you think I'm trouble now as your partner. Imagine me as your enemy. And it's like, motherfucker, you are everyone's enemy.
Yeah.
You have been this entire time. What are you talking about?
Yeah. This exact same thing was said about you to Jimmy, right?
Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Howard tries to reason with him, and Chuck says, you know, this we can speak in court. tell them what else is there to say. Fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Like, what an insult, you know? Mm-hmm. Howard leaves. Chuck puts down the immersion blender in pain. He does his, you know, red car, blue house, counting blue cars thing.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy uses a needle and syringe to fill some bingo balls with magnetic paint. Pretty sick. Pretty good. You know, he's in his like home lab doing this. I like it a lot.
Gary, you know, so I couldn't stop myself from watching ahead. I'm in the middle of season 5 now. This happens toward the end of every season.
He goes to the home lab.
Goes to the home lab. But I posted to this effect, but I just wanted to say Jimmy needs to start a dirty work business.
Yeah. Right? He'd be really good at it.
Yeah, revenge for hire, putting together plans, like just basically pranks, right?
He's really good at it.
He needs to take some sex workers, put them in the trunks of cars.
Where needed. Yeah. Yeah, to deploy them like Protoss units into cars.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know. Sex worker could be a Protoss unit. I don't want to be anti-sex worker. I was thinking it'd probably be a Terran unit. Mm-hmm. You know, what with the being human and all, but...
Yeah.
So he's doing this to cheat in Eileen's favor at bingo.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sit with her. It's really sad. You know, the winner, somebody wins. Jimmy hands out new cards and gives bottom deals Irene a special one.
Yeah. Is that a special fancy magician term?
He did. He bottom dealt it. Uh-huh. It's not that fancy. It's mean what it says. Uh-huh. But he's doing his things and he says, you know, a little heavy handed on part of the writers. He goes, you know, I sold my soul for B-I-N-G-N-O.
Uh-huh.
That's a little on the nose, folks.
Yeah.
You know, but he puts the magnetic balls in the hopper and he's, you know, twists Marco's ring and starts calling. He set up so Bingo gets Irene gets a bingo in 5 moves, which is the quickest you could ever get a bingo.
Yeah. And, you know, immediately just supernaturally lucky. Right. And she goes up for her prize, this little plastic cat thing. And like previously, like when the previous guy won, everybody was just, you know, clapping.
Yeah, lost
like
their
they were standing, crying, tearing shitting. Their shirts off.
Yeah.
But Irene goes up and nothing.
Yep.
Everybody is just, I think there's like one person clapping.
Yeah.
Hans Molman back there.
Yeah. I was saying, go Irene.
Yeah.
You know, and she runs out. She's crying. Yeah. Jimmy follows out, like, what's wrong? And she goes, oh, my friends have turned on me. They're whispering about me. It's so cruel. And I don't even know why.
No.
And Jimmy waits a beat and goes, I think I might know why. It's about the settlement.
Maybe they want the money to improve their lives.
That's so funny. Maybe you can use it to buy things uh-huh. that we like. Very funny.
Goods and services.
Yeah.
You know, and he says, yeah, maybe it's not about the money itself. Maybe it's about the idea that they think that you're not considering them and thinking of their needs.
Yeah.
You know?
And she just wants it over. Like, I wish we hadn't started this lawsuit. I don't care about the money. I just want my friends, mm-hmm. you know? And that is, I understand the perspective she's in. Sandpiper was taking, you know, dragging them over the fucking coals.
Yeah.
Like super shittily. They were not going to have money left for, you know, for their kids, for, you know, burial, shit like that. Like, it is good that this lawsuit is happening.
Yeah. Sandpiper deserves to be punched in the nose.
Yeah. Jimmy took it too far. Mm-hmm. In terms of this action,
he literally made it personal.
He did. Yeah. Like this is again, a failure of imagination. Like this is, I feel like Jimmy could have come up with a better way to do this.
Yeah.
She asked, you know, what Jimmy would do. And he says, like, I'm not a lawyer right now, but Irene, listen to your heart.
Yeah.
You know, again, pushing towards this.
Very canny social manipulation. He has engineered a situation where her heart is going to cry out for get it over with. Right. Yeah.
Kim, still on fire from the oil derrick, assembles all her binders for the Gatwick deal meeting.
Yeah. So it's kind of an Ignis situation.
Yeah. She's at the office. She asks Francesca for some coffee, and Jimmy walks in with his bottle of Zafiro and Heyo, saying, stop what you're doing. We're celebrating.
Yeah. You know? I don't want to hear the end of any sentences. Drink with me.
You know, and she didn't tell him about Gatwood. Mm-hmm. You know, she is extremely overextended.
Yeah,
like they are like 20 minutes late to getting on the road. They're barely going to make it in time. And he's just become a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, like he wants to tell her this. It sucks that he's not paying attention to how busy she is. And she's telling him in no uncertain terms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, listen, I'm too busy for this. He's also trying to be like, you don't have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're millionaires now.
Yeah. Like, I still agree to it. It's still my reputation. $1 million isn't going to last us forever.
Is big news. Yeah. Though, right? Like, it's under ordinary circumstances, you could take 2 seconds and learn about becoming a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, she has definitely overextended herself.
Yes. And she doesn't believe that it could have moved so fast. You know, like, don't get bogged down in the details.
Like, she doesn't think that she is overextended either. Like, as we're going to find out.
Yeah. You know, our troubles are over now, from now on.
Yeah. It's very naive. Like, it's really childish. There's a thing where he, on some level, knows he did something really bad, and he has to kind of overcorrect the other way.
Yeah.
Like, he has to have a celebration commensurate with the guilt.
Yes.
That he's feeling.
Yeah.
You know? But she leaves. She goes, she's like, I gotta go. I'll talk to you later. She's being really kind. Yeah. And Jimmy goes, grabs some mugs and says, Francesca, shots now. Francesca doesn't care for booze.
No. She downs it and like kind of like winces, makes a yucky face and goes, smooth.
Yeah, it's very cute. Yeah. She's driving down the street. She's rehearsing her pitch. Kim is. And she starts getting out of town and gets kind of quiet. And then it cuts to a car crash.
This is, oh my God, it's so brutal.
Yeah, it's a nasty car crash. Airbag deploys. She's bloodied. Something has happened to her arm. We can see that as she gets out.
Yeah, just immediate cut to airbag. Like, you know, the camera never moves from the passenger seat looking at her.
Yeah.
As she just kind of like dozes off, and you know she gets out, and we see that she drifted across opposing traffic, went off the road, and crashed head on into a boulder. You know, like all of the papers are scattered everywhere. She's holding her right arm and like she's just kind of standing there gape mouthed.
Yep. And that's the end of the episode. At one point they wanted to make her survival a cliffhanger and decided that'd be disrespectful. That's good. Mm-hmm. That would have been stupid. Mm-hmm. You're better than that.
Just because it's the obvious move doesn't mean you should take it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also just like, that's not, you know, it's enough that she's been hurt. Like, we don't even think that she's mortally wounded. She gets out of the car and walks around.
Yeah.
Like, her life is never in question. Mm-hmm. She got into a car accident. I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but it's a wake up call. Literally. It's not her in danger of mortal, you know, of existential danger at this point. This has actually like saved her life in a weird way.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. I love it. Incredibly good episode of this show.
Yeah. Really good episode of the show. The end of the season's great. Mm-hmm. I love Howard stuff during this. I love Chuck stuff. I like where this is going with Kim. I like that this is what takes to wake her up, you know, from this kind of thing. I like Jimmy crossing this line. I like him being like, God, I don't want to fucking uncross this, but I'm going to do it. It's a really important step in the path to crapulence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where you do bad things, but then you also undo them at great cost to yourself.
Yes.
Like, enormous cost to yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, ending up worse than you were than when you started.
Yeah.
Like, that is part of the, like, reverse kitty hawking that you're doing of, like, you know, not a almost takeoff, but an almost crash.
Yeah.
That you're going to do for a little while.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it later, but I think that, like, this is, like, super necessary after we see what he did to Chuck and Rebecca. Just to show, like, you know, to remind people for however justified that is, like, he is still going to do this stuff, and he still has a conscience about it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a thing. Yeah. We're slowly moving motivations.
Yeah.
Like, his motivation to do it to Chuck, like, Chuck kind of fucked him, and Chuck betrayed him.
Yeah.
He used Rebecca for that. Here, these people have not done anything to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's literally an innocent victims.
He saw how powerful it was when he did it to Chuck, and he's, you know, trying to deploy it in other situations.
Yeah. There are extenuating not circumstances. Justifiable. Like, he's under economic pressures that are really intense, not all of which are fair, but it sucks by any way you cut it. What can people do if they like the show?
If you like the show, you can support our work and get a bunch of content. Like, most of the like non-video game media that we talk about is in our bonus stuff on the Patreon. So go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, kick us a few bucks a month, and get a twice monthly show of us talking about horror media.
Yeah, really fun. Good episodes on that recently. $10, you get Adaptation Decay and Quackstack. Also really good shows. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. You can also purchase a horror media coverage. if you're a patron at our Patreon store. You can also leave us ratings, reviews, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, talk about us on message boards and Reddit and social media. We really appreciate that since we don't advertise. And big thanks to Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah. Until next time, don't drive when you're that tired, for God's fucking sake.
Watch out for burnout. God.
Yeah.